Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, not only do we have a first look at the Fantastic Four first steps, plus M. Night and Nicholas Sparks are making a movie together and a book. It's really weird. Our topic this week is what defunct TV shows are in need of a reboot or a sequel series, whatever you want to call that particular phenomena. Oh, and reviews of Companion and Green and Gold. Let's get on with the show. My name is Aaron Peterson. Joining me today, I'm for the host, Trey Heinrichs.
I don't even know.
He just said, bye, just John. Happened. You're now just combined as a human being with Troy.
I don't know what's going on here. It's just so weird.
See, he's covering both characters now.
I can't do the puppet voice at all.
You cannot. And Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Yeah, John is still... He's kind of taking a sabbatical so he can get adjusted to his new work environment, his personal vocation.
Yeah, apparently that's inside my body, I guess.
I know. Hey, take it as a compliment, right? Like, you guys are joined. You're married now.
Hey, between my cycling and his Orange Theory, I'm sure we're probably like the most buffest man ever. I don't know.
You both are hairy as hell. I've learned that very recently since you decided to come to podcast naked, apparently. Sure. Picture that world. Enjoy. Troy is basically shirtless. All right. I'm sorry.
We're going to have to put like a caveat that there's nudity on this podcast.
Thank God it's audio.
Or like a warning.
Thank God it's audio. All right. Remember, you can always find more.
I don't know how you can grease this joke anymore.
Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com. Join our Facebook group. We're on X at Buy Popcorn and other stuff. So we do want to mention that another Simple Favor, that is the official title of the sequel to A Simple Favor, and it's going to debut at South by Southwest on March 7th, where Amanda and I are going to be on the ground covering.
I've never been more jealous about you guys going than I am this year.
Do you have some hard-hitting questions for Blake Lively? Is that
what it is? No, I have them for Anna Kendrick, actually.
I would love to talk to both of those queens.
Yeah, so would I.
I'm just excited. The first one was so good.
I actually have the poster sitting right next to me of the first one. Such a good movie.
To clarify, you have the movie poster, not the poster that was hanging in the living room?
Correct.
Okay.
And it's directed by Paul Feig, who I love.
You guys have a history.
We do have a history.
You do, indeed.
I wrote an article on True Story, wrote an article on Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. He reached out to me personally, and yes, I made sure it was him.
Name drop.
I know. I feel like Will Arnett.
See, he does it all the time. All the time.
Just to say thank you. And he appreciated the article. That was very, very nice, actually. It's very appreciative. So I'm looking forward to that, though. Now, Troy, what surprised me is you wanted to talk about this, not Amanda and I, who are going to be there. So I assume you're just that big a fan of the first movie. Are you glad they're making another one?
Oh, I am 100% ecstatic that they're making another one, because the two of these women together on screen, just the way that they like played off of each other, it was like the best, like just sit down and like, I don't know, it was just everything about it was amazing.
It must be, because you said like at least 47 times in that one sentence.
And I could tell you, there is one scene in the first movie where Blake Lively steps out of the car, and it is like in that moment, you just are like, I just want to be Blake Lively. I want to be with Blake. The power she exudes in that scene without saying any words at all is fantastic. And then how she completely destroys everybody that's standing next to Anna Kendrick when she invites Anna Kendrick's character over to the house. Fantastic. And then the way the movie ends is the funniest shit you've ever seen, because you never see it coming.
And honest question, which I agree with everything you said. But honest question, we've already talked about this lawsuit. We talked about it a few episodes ago. I'm not going to rehash it. But there is a lot going on with this whole lawsuit with her and Justin Baldoni, and it ends with us, right? Do you think that is going to detract from the enjoyment of this movie and her career going forward, no matter what the result is, I guess?
I don't think so.
No? I think it's recoverable?
I forgot about the lawsuit already, to be honest.
Okay. Amanda, what
about you? Yeah, I think there's... there's not an, I don't know, she's never done anything before that would cause people to be like, oh, she's doing it again. Like, we can forgive, even if this was like her, she had like some culpability in whatever the situation is. I feel like people would be responsive to forgiving her. And if not, then she just maintains the fan base and nobody questions her culpability at all. And so I don't think she'll have like a real impact.
You're saying
to her
his accusations are true, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if she really did do any of what his accusations are, but honestly, her and Ryan Reynolds, it's not like they've been slandered by people coming out and validating the allegations. Really, there's not a ton that would make people feel a negative way towards her just because of it. I think she has more people on her side, or just neutral, don't care.
I think she had a lot more to lose by filing. I think she's aware of that. But, you know, we'll see. I'm curious how that works out. But we got other stuff to talk about. Most importantly, Marvel's first look at the Fantastic Four. And by four, they mean the fourth try at this. That's right, because this is the fourth go-round.
No, this is the first time for Disney.
Oh Jesus. It's still the fourth iteration. There was the one that the doomed one that just never went anywhere and I think still hasn't seen the light of day. Then there was the Jessica Alba one, which I kind of like those movies. I'm not going to lie. I like those two movies. Then there was the abysmal one that had Miles Teller in it. Somebody made that bad decision. And now we're doing it again. This is the first time in the cinematic universe. This is our first look at it. You've got a fantastic cast, right? You've got Pedro Pascal, Vanessa Kirby. You know, you have Joseph Quinn. So it's a great cast. Now, I have a question. We got the trailer. We got our first look. You can find it in this post. I'll have it linked up there. And you have Iban Moss Bachrach, who is on, what is the cooking show? The Bear. So what did you think of the trailer? I mean, does this get you excited for another foray into the Fantastic Four with these first steps?
Well, for me, the one thing that gets me excited more than anything is Pedro Pascal. I love his work. I am a big fan of his. So I'm willing to watch pretty much anything for him. And I think that will draw in a lot of people as well. I'm not even going to consider how I might feel about the film based on the trailer, because I've been let down so many times with this franchise content, and so I'm tired of hoping for something good and then being disappointed. So I'm just going in very neutral. Like, I am just going to pretend like, okay, we'll just see how it goes. If it's worth it, then great, and if it's not, then at least we'll have something to talk about on the podcast.
Fair enough.
I mean, yes, am I disappointed that Pedro Pascal is in this instead of John Krasinski? A little bit, since I was teased with it.
Freaking bitter about that, aren't
you? Yeah. I mean, it's fair. It's fair.
Two bitters. Okay. It's almost an old-fashioned.
Let's go back. Let's go backwards a little bit.
Hang on. I'm proud of that. I'm going to clap for my own joke.
That was a really clever joke. Go backwards a little bit. When we saw him.
Yep.
When we saw him and had that, I don't know, 45-second moment with him. Everybody was excited.
True.
You can't deny it.
Excited.
It was so wonderful. We were like, people were cheering. There was fist pumping.
Yeah, it was pretty exciting.
So I can't deny that he would have been an excellent choice. But am I going to, like, does that mean Pedro Pascal couldn't be perfect as well? No.
No, he
can both be perfect.
No, he can be.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. He's great. In this trailer, I'll be honest, Vanessa Kirby, I loved her. I mean, just her voiceover, even though she has the cheesiest dialogue, we'll do it, we'll face it together. Oh God, who wrote this? I feel like that's in every damn superhero movie. But she delivers it in her own way. It feels different, even though you've heard it in so many superhero movies. I love her as an actress. I really do.
I think it's really going to depend on how Kirby and Pascal play off of each other to have that relationship-ish thing that kind of brews between the two of them. If that works on screen, and then I think it'll be fine. Because I think all the other characters are going to be amazing, especially with who's playing Silver Surfer. That should be enough to make this worthwhile, in my opinion, just that alone.
Julia Garner?
Yep.
Yep. You think at some point when she's, if she goes up against Fantastic Four, she's like, if you want to stop me, you're going to have to kill me.
Fucking kill. Oh.
Sorry. Sorry. Well, there were a couple surprises, right? And if you don't know who the, God, I don't, do we have to explain this? But if you don't know who the Fantastic Four, they go into space, they have a space accident, they got different powers. Reed Richards can, he's Mr. Fantastic. He stretches. Vanessa Kirby is Sue Storm. She becomes invisible. Joseph Quinn is Johnny Storm. That's Human Torch, who's way better with Chris Evans. I got to say, like, he really nailed that character. I'm hoping.
Yeah, Joseph, the whole flame Quinn, on in the trailer. I was like, oh, we got eye roll.
And then Ebon becomes Ben Grimm, who is the Thing, and he just looks like a giant rock. Yeah, the effects look good. Sure.
Yeah.
It's weird that he doesn't have that big gravelly voice. Like, he's just speaking with his normal voice. That's weird. But there are a couple surprises. So you got Galactus, which, if you don't know who that is, it's this gigantic, world-devouring being from space that is one of the biggest villains for the Fantastic Four and all of Marvel as a whole. And you get kind of like him looming over the Statue of Liberty in the trailer. So you get a little bit of that. So we don't know where it's going to go, but Galactus is always joined by the Silver Surfer. So that's probably where Julia Garner is going to play a part. I'm guessing Galactus might have a minor role. Love that. What's that?
I said, I love that.
All right. You got a picture of John Malkovich as Jesus, I guess. I don't know, but he's theoretically people think that he's playing a character named Ivan Kragov, who's a villain in the comics known as Red Ghost. He's a Soviet scientist who kind of replicates the team's accident, and then he gets abilities of his own and, I don't know, creates his own team, etc., becomes an evil foe. So you have him. You don't get to see much of him. And then you get Herbie. I can't remember if Herbie was in the other movies. Honestly, I don't remember. But it's like a robot.
I'm trying to remember.
The Herbie I'm thinking of is very different.
You're thinking about the car?
Yes.
I love those movies.
You're done. Can we boot her from the show, please?
That's what you were thinking? You're like, I don't remember seeing Herbie the talking car. Where was
this? I was like, I clearly don't know what this robot is.
That would fit,
the
though.
Only thing that's coming to mind is the car.
This takes place in the 60s, has very 60s aesthetic, looks visually eye-popping. I love the car in the movie. Wouldn't it be cool if you got a little Herbie driving down the road? Disney owns it.
That would be really fun.
That wouldn't fit, though, because they drive like the blue hovercraft type car.
It could be on the street, all right? If he's driving somewhere, going somewhere, maybe has a little chat with Galactus on the way or something.
I mean, Herbie was in the comic book.
Well, this Herbie was.
I just don't remember if he was in the other movies.
I don't recall him ever showing.
It's been so long.
That's the problem with those movies. There's not much memorable about them. I can tell you who was in them. Who I enjoyed. I enjoyed Flame On. That was fun. Enjoyed him more in Deadpool and Wolverine. That was a better representation of the
totally
character.
Was.
But I don't remember much of what happened in there, other than it was the worst possible Dr. Doom you could imagine. It's terrible.
The worst.
But the thing is like, so this came out, this should be like a Superman reveal. Like, hey guys, we went back to the barrel, we reinvented it, bam, we're giving you what you want. And all I heard was a whiff. I didn't hear much excitement.
I mean,
and I want to be excited for this.
The challenge is that the MCU had kind of like had like a bump, we'll call it, with the whole multiverse and then the whole Kang the Conqueror and all the stuff and the drama that happened with that. And like, it's trying to find itself. So it tried to, you know, we had Marvel Jesus bringing us back a little bit of hints of Fantastic Four stuff in there, which was kind of cool to kind of bridge into the movie. Mm-hmm. So if this lands, like it should land. Because now we got some mojo going, especially coming off of Captain America here coming up next weekend, I believe is when it mm-hmm. comes out.
Yep.
I think we got some momentum. So once we get the momentum into summer, I think you'll see more hype about it. Like the trailer just dropped. So let people chat about it for a few days and get angry on the internet. And then we'll have some fun stuff to talk about.
Okay.
But trailer wise, I was excited.
Were you? Okay. So you were excited. You like the 60s. Kind of throwback feel.
Yeah, because and at least I can have a Marvel movie where there isn't a giant robot laying in the middle of the ocean that people tend to forget about.
Well, what I want to know is how are they going to get them to modern era? There's going to be time travel again, something along those lines?
Space, wormholes.
Oh.
Easy.
Look at you. You should write for Disney. They're over here thinking it way too complicated. You're like, wormhole, bam,
problem solved.
Tony Stark spent bendy, all that time stuff. For nothing.
And we still have multiverse, so maybe it goes that way. I don't know.
All right. Well, let's Move on to something that I find interesting, Troy, especially to you. You love M. Night Shyamalan. Most of his stuff. So I find this fascinating. I know it came out technically last week, but we had the Oscar episode, so we didn't get a chance to talk about it. And I think this is a cool story that not enough people are talking about. So M. Night Shyamalan and romance author Nicholas Sparks, many of his books have become movies, but he's a romance novelist. They created an idea for a story together, right? And then M. Night's going to take that and make a movie starring Jake Gyllenhaal based on this idea, written in his own way. And Nicholas Sparks is going to go write a book on it, written in his normal way. And it's supposedly a supernatural romantic thriller. Both are going to have the same concept and characters, but tailored to their respective mediums. This is a cool idea. This is just a very unique way to do a novel and a film, and to have like two icons in their own genre, if you will, kind of deliver in their own way.
And it could be up for best original screenplay and not adapted screenplay, because it's an original idea, because it's not based on the book. The book's happening at the exact same time.
I think you're getting way ahead of yourself if you think it's getting an Oscar nomination.
You never know. You never know. I love this idea.
It could qualify. That's all I'm saying. It
feels like a trap.
I mean, this for me, I think this is a novel concept, because I feel like M. Night has slipped. I feel he's either overthought it or tried to come up with a new gimmick and it just hasn't worked for him. So to now have a pseudo writing partner in a way to kind of bounce the ideas of the story off of, I think that'll help him give some new creative juices that'll put it over the top. And it could be something really fantastic. And then people are going to be excited, because either some people are going to read the book, not caring about M. Night, and then want to go see the movie. And then some people are going to want to see the movie because they like M. Night and they're not Nicholas Sparks fans. But then they'll come back and then read the novel because they're interested to see if it goes a different direction.
Which it very well could go a different direction, because it's the same idea, but different. It's going to roll out the same way or a different way.
That's the thing that I'm most interested with this, is seeing a one uniform idea branch out in two different directions, mm-hmm. and how those two different perspectives are going to lean into that piece of the story. Like, Nicholas Sparks is probably going to go heavy into the romance. M. Night is going to go heavier into the horror. So it'll be really fun to be able to compare the dichotomy of these two ideas and where they end up at.
Wouldn't it be great if they flip it entirely? Like, you go to M. Night's movie and it's like the sweetest love story with Jake Gyllenhaal.
It's The Notebook too.
Yeah, absolutely. Then you go read his book, Nicholas Sparks' book, and it's like, and then he murdered her on day three. Jesus! And then he cut her arm off. Jesus! Oh, it wasn't him at all. It was actually his twin brother.
There were demon nuns floating around.
So that would be fun.
Here's what would be cool. Maybe it's just me. I think this is cool.
It's probably just you.
The Notebook takes place over two timelines,
uh-huh.
right? So what if the movie is one timeline and the book is one timeline, and they're kind of doing it that way?
Which one of them does he have Alzheimer's?
I don't know.
Oh, okay. Isn't that
the big reveal? It could be an interesting story. You're like, because it's about the same characters, right? The characters could be in one mm-hmm. timeline in the movie, and they could be in another timeline in the book. So that's another way they could like use that concept, because Nicholas has used that before.
That's a good idea too.
Why not? Let's just go nuts. I just love this idea. I love that I have the same idea and I can see it two completely different ways. I just think that's really cool. That's what I like about the idea. And when people say, "Wow, I hate when you remake this and you remake that," I love when certain things are remade and they're remade in a unique or different way, because then it doesn't taint or touch the original. It's its own thing. I love that.
Except this isn't a remake. This is its two own original things.
No, but I was going to segue. But you go ahead and just jack it up as much as you can.
Look, I'm the Segway guy. You're not the Segway guy.
Now it's going to your head.
Stay in your lane.
Seriously, like, now the head is expanding. Head's expanding.
I feel like there's going to be a gunfight here.
I knew you were going to say some stupid shit like that.
That's how you segue. You see how that works? Well, okay.
Then you got to complete. Go ahead. You finish it up.
I need you to get the segue to faculty. That's the one I want you to segue into.
We're gonna segue.
No, because gunfighter is too easy.
Well, then look, when I'm done with the gunfight, I'm going to take Aaron to school, and then we're going to have a talk with the faculty, because it's coming back as well.
Oh my God.
Kudos.
All right.
Go ahead.
That one passes.
Go ahead. Well played.
Well played.
Well, the faculty's coming back, period. That's all you need to know. People like it. Some people don't like it. I think it's a fantastic movie. I have a lot of fun with the faculty. I am excited to see what they do next with this.
Yeah. So what it is it's getting a remake with Drew Hancock, who wrote Companion, which we're going to talk about later. And the original Faculty was written by Scream's Kevin Williamson. It was directed by Robert Rodriguez. And then Ethan Hawke is writing and producing a remake of Gregory Peck's The Gunfighter, which was also the segue he was working on. And that's a movie that he claims is one of his favorite movies. So that one revolves around a gunfighter who rides into town looking for the love of his life. And then she wants nothing to do with him and he keeps getting in trouble. The Faculty is basically body snatchers in a high school. I think the one most people are excited about is The Faculty, right? That's a movie.
100%.
Okay. Well, 100%. Tell me why. Other than the fact that it had an awesome soundtrack that nobody ever talks about, but I still love that soundtrack.
I love the soundtrack.
That's actually a really good point.
And Salma Hayek was there. That's it's really how I got in the door.
That's the only reason Aaron watched The Faculty.
That's the initial, that really got me in the door. It did. All right, Amanda. So you were excited. You're most excited. Why this one?
Well, okay, so first of all, I love Robert Rodriguez, and the fact that he's still attached to this as a producer gives me hope that we're going to get something fun, and he'll have probably influence into it.
Sure.
Because he's really great at teaching and integrating those perspectives into his teaching. So, yes, it was so much fun. It was a fun movie. It got really good horror that blended with like some really funny lines. And you had a really great cast. I think there's a way to, you know, make different versions or multiple iterations of this film because it's such I don't want to say classic, but in a way it sort of is because
it is.
I don't know. Who doesn't love a body snatcher movie?
Man, I love this movie. And I could already see a bunch of different ways they can. It's got to be in a high school, right? And think about it. Kids today, they're always on their phones. They're not paying attention. Would they even notice if people changed? You know what I mean? I think you got a whole world to play with there. And one.
Oh, yeah.
The movie itself was very Breakfast Club meets body snatchers in a lot of ways. And just bring that same concept to modern day. Like, show it with what modern schools, modern teens are like. And I think you got a whole new, cool, fun vibe.
I mean, you could even just be like very meta about it. And because kids are on their phones so much, like the teachers like brainwash the kids through their phones somehow, through like the school app or something. And you can make it very like modern day.
Like a technical version of the body snatchers, yeah, in a way?
Exactly. Like you're reprogramming the students based on what they're going to on the school app and stuff.
That's a clever idea.
That is clever, but you're not gonna get the cool reveal where it was the cool
aliens.
The cool nerdy chick that ends up walking butt naked down the pool. You know? That reveal. True. That won't be there.
Well, no, because then you find out that it was actually a robot, you know, an AI or something.
Well, I mean, it's the guy who wrote Companion, so it makes sense.
Exactly. Well, okay, so that's what I wanna ask, because okay. Kevin Williamson, who was the original writer, mm-hmm. which you referenced, mm-hmm. wrote Scream. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's all you really need to know.
Absolutely.
So great at,
and I know what you did last summer. He's a good
thrower. Yes. Right. He's done a lot of great things. I just called out my favorite personally, but so he does a really great job of injecting humor, but also like having really, I guess I'll call them fun and entertaining horror moments. And my only concern or hesitation is having, you know, different writer in there, and I haven't seen Companion, so we'll go into the actual review of the film, but I'm curious for you guys that have seen it, do you have faith and confidence that he's going to be able to match that level?
Does it have to match that level is the more important question.
Yeah.
It could be a completely different kind of horror.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking from like a standard or expectation, yeah. Like that makes it, because his movies were so great, the ones that he wrote.
I agree with that. And they also had a fun mystery element, which I hope this mimics. Look, Troy hasn't seen Companion, only I have. We'll talk about it at the end of the show. By the way, if I didn't mention this, we're moving reviews to the end of the show. We've had people over a long period of time said, hey, why do you have reviews in the middle? Because, you know, then I don't want to be spoiled on certain things, even though we try really hard not to spoil stuff. But there's always something, you know, that gives something away. And so we decided we're going to put things at the end of the show. So that way you get the topic and you get everything else. And when you get to the end, you can listen or not listen. It's up to you. So it'll be at the end of the show. Yes, he can do this. Drew Hancock, companion, very similar in tone, very similar in a kind of modern, sarcastic slash snarky sense of humor.
Okay.
It can definitely play in that sandbox, for sure.
All right. We're going to give it a good go.
And let's be honest. Look, I love The Faculty. I love the soundtrack almost as much as the movie. I still listen to it. That version of Another Brick in the Wall, I absolutely love.
Such a good, so good.
It's so good.
And also, Josh Hartnett has never been cooler than he is in that movie. He was the coolest
that's,
mofo.
That's actually a very, very valid facts. Statement.
Absolutely amazing in that movie. He's just freaking cool. In fact, I might watch that after this freaking podcast. Okay, but now I forgot my entire point. But I'm a big fan of the movie is what I'm saying. But it's not a masterpiece, okay? It's not.
No.
It's not high art.
And I'm not expecting it to be like a perfect film, okay? I'm not intending for that at all. But just something that is as enjoyable mm-hmm. and that will, like, this was a cult classic. So you do have a high standard to follow.
Agreed.
There's also a product of its time, too. It works because of when it came out. It was that, like, mid-90s Kevin Williamson height of his, you know, writing and styles and whatnot. It was like the tone of like life and internet coming online and things of that nature. So it had its place. The question will be is like, how do you do that again mm-hmm. in the mid 2020s?
Famke Janssen, John Stewart. God, what he was young. That was a long time ago. That was a long time ago. Yeah. So definitely keep an eye out for that. That's going to be pretty exciting. Also something that's coming to homes that you can see, which is it's a great film. September 5, Academy Award nominee for Best Original Screenplay. September 5 is now on digital. It's based on true events at the 1972 Olympics and the hostage crisis that changed media coverage forever. You might have heard this story before. You might have seen films revolved around this before, but you haven't seen it done this way. It does it its own way, and it's extremely unique and riveting. Starring Peter Skarsgård, John Margaro, Ben Chaplin, and Leone Benesch. You can buy or rent September 5 on Fandango at Home right now. It's rated PG and it's from Paramount Pictures. Don't miss a chance. Like, seriously, check this one out. In fact, if you want a chance to win a copy, we're giving some away. We're giving some away because we want you to see something great. If you want to enter a contest to win, send us an email, contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com, contests@thehollywoodoutsider.com with the subject line September 5, your name, and we'll draw randomly and we'll send some winners a free copy. Of September 5. Aren't we nice?
I think yeah, it's almost like getting a medal.
We should do we should give one as an award for the yes. person who wins the Oscar.
Oh, yeah, that's a great
nomination
idea.
Thing.
We'll give something else away. I've already committed here at this point.
Okay. All
Come
right.
Come on now.
All right.
Man, it's just like giving them away. No, no, we got a contest.
No, that is the contest. I'm saying whoever wins the contest of the Oscars deserves to get what will inevitably be. Potentially, I can't read the future.
I tell you what.
An Oscar winner, but at least an Oscar-nominated film.
Is I'm the just contest saying, it sounded prepared cool. yet? Have you done that yet? Have you got that worked
the
out?
The contest can be prepared.
So it's not. So when it is, we will talk about what the options are. How about that? How about that? We don't want to leave people hanging on a string waiting for an option to get this copy. They can get it. They can get it now. Enter now. Please do.
Podcast will be right back after this board meeting. Because you're all bored listening to them talk about it.
Let's go to our From the Outside In topic. Could you be bored? Shame on you for that one. All right. Let's reboot our favorite TV show. So we're going to talk about the Geller in the Room, right? Buffy the Vampire Slayer is aiming to reboot on Woo! Hulu. Amanda, I think, reached another plane when this news broke. But she's coming to a reboot on Hulu with Sarah Michelle Gellar returning as Buffy Summers, though in a recurring role. This will focus on a new Slayer written by Poker Face's Nora and Lila Zuckerman and directed by Chloe Zhao, who did Eternals, so we'll forgive her for that. But she apparently is a super Buffy fan. First thing, go ahead. Go ahead.
Well, I want to know what Amanda gave to the powers that be in order to make this happen.
my soul, my mental health, my sanity, and everything I have to offer. Yep.
I'm gonna do a pop quiz because I bet you she can have it. She doesn't know this is coming. You ready, Amanda?
Oh fuck! I'm probably gonna get them all wrong.
Are you ready? I'm gonna give you.
I'll try.
No. This is. Okay. I think it's easy for you. Off the top of your head, if you can, what is the opening to Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Do you want me to do the song?
No,
or yeah.
Do, 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 do. No.
Because I can even tell you when she does a gasp.
No.
In the intro.
Just the intro. You know what I'm talking about.
In every generation, a slayer is born. She alone must stand against the vampires, the demons, and the forces of darkness. She is the slayer.
Wow.
That part?
Yeah. Well done.
Okay.
I just wanted to still have
the ending. I can do the ending.
What's the ending?
Do it. I love it. It makes me so happy.
Oh, that's funny.
Imagine if I would have got something wrong and I have the Buffy tattoo on my arm.
God, that would be sad.
How embarrassing.
The best part of the ending is that how many people don't know what that is actually from. That's the best part.
Oh, yeah. Tell them the story.
So if you watch the original movie, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Paul Reubens, Pee-wee, is the vampire, and then he's dying. He's literally going so literally at the end of the credits, there's a little puppet figure that comes across the screen, and they did that to as a throwback to the movie.
It's so cute.
It's
too
so cute.
All right, so how do we feel about this now that we know what we do know about this topic? Now, it's not two series, this is a pilot. But based on the reaction from fans, my God, I think Hulu would be nuts to not, because the internet has been blowing up over this one. So we're going to talk more about what we'd like to see come back. That's not really the topic. But because it's Buffy and Amanda loves Buffy, she never gets the opportunity to talk about Buffy. So how do you feel about this?
Why can't
Because I talked about it too much that I had to be banned.
You love Buffy too. Do you have a tattoo of her?
I do not have a tattoo of Sarah Michelle Gellar, no.
Maybe you should commit. Get on it. Really commit.
She slept with Spike. There's no way in hell I'm doing that. Skank.
What? Okay. Well, clearly you're an Angel fan.
Yes, that was amazing. I loved Angel. It was such a great show.
She was so good in bed, she sucked his soul out. Go ahead, Amanda.
Oh my God. That's a really funny way to put that too.
Well played.
Oh man, that's so funny. The thing that I'm excited about, yes, Buffy coming back. I love the story, anything that's female empowerment, that's in their aggressive fighters. I love it. I'm always here for it. The fact that SMG is returning in whatever capacity that will end up looking like, okay, beautiful. I love it. But we cannot forget the fact that Poker Face has been pretty good. So that gives me a lot of hope. Now, I know this is semi-controversial, but I am curious and eager to see, without Joss Whedon, if it still feels as much Buffy as the original show. Because that was his baby. Regardless of what he did, how you feel about him, you know, in his hostile, toxic workplace environment, he still created that series. That was his dream baby,
his
that
voice,
he made come to life. So,
Troy, how do you feel about the news before we get into the weed?
I love the news. I think it's great. I think there could be lots of stories that could be told. As long as we don't go back to Sunnydale, that's the number one thing I have. Don't go back to Sunnydale. It's it's gone. Go somewhere else.
Gonna be a new Slayer too, right? It's a new generation at this point.
Well, this is the big question, right? And not to give anything away from the TV show, but the TV show's been off the air for quite some time.
I think we're safe.
But it's fine.
The idea that what used to happen was that one Slayer dies, another Slayer is born. But based on what happens at the end of the series, it's almost like anybody could use the Force kind of concept. anybody could be a Slayer. So.
Well, they just roll it back like Disney did and pretend that never happened, I guess.
Could do that too.
No.
It's giving and sharing the power.
It's saying that, now there are more out there. They're unlocked, basically.
Right. So the question becomes is, do they keep going with that? And then we have multiple Slayers coming together for some like reunion. And at the reunion of the Slayerness, is that some focal point of evil that'll happen at that point? Or does it go back to a more traditional passing of the torch where SMG is going to, you know, die and then a new Slayer is going to be born based on the thing?
I wouldn't like that. I can tell you right now, I would not like that. Don't bring her back just to kill her. It's just like the Han Solo of it all. No. Nope. Mm-mm.
I would be so mad.
Here's one thing. Okay, so there are a lot of people that have never seen Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
The TV show.
Shame on you.
Well, the movie as well. I still say Christy Swanson was a better Buffy. I said it. I don't take it back.
For sure.
I do love the show. I absolutely adore the show, even the sixth season, because there were still some highlights, despite some really weird choices. But
yes,
one thing that I always find hard to explain to people is why I loved it so much. And I think a lot of it have to do with, you know, bonding with other people that love the show. Obviously, I think that's a big one. It was a big cultural moment, but just because it really put teen problems in real light by making it, but still keeping it supernatural, but making it real. It was like watching a Dawson's Creek, but without all the fluff and having a little fun instead.
It was about your friends. It was about family. The fact that Joyce, you know, it was like single mother. And then you had Giles acting like the father figure, but then the friends became a family. So there's a lot of family dynamic to it in the undertone of what the actual show was from the, you know, kill vampires and bad guys stuff.
Well, and it also had the beautiful formula, which we've seen in other shows that at least all of us three really enjoy, which is Veronica Mars, the formula of having an overarching story throughout the season, but then mini stories in each episode. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, instead of an investigation like Veronica Mars, which is, you know, probably maybe even where they got some of this formula, but it's mini in creatures or vampires or things like that that they have to defeat in those episodes. And so it gives you a lot of variety. And I've always, always, always loved that each episode is unique in its own way. Like none of them are exactly the same. So it doesn't feel like you're watching the same episode. I'm going to refer to another show that Troy and I watch way too much that we shouldn't. Grey's Anatomy.
Come on.
Well, hold on. Let me say what I'm going to say.
Wait, that means I'm still in the running for the prize, right? Because I didn't
shut
say
the,
it.
Shut the hell up.
You're still in.
Okay.
But with that show, you could forget which episode was which episode. Like, oh, they kind of all blend together at some point. Buffy didn't really have that problem because it tried to diversify the episodes by having those mini stories. It kind of got away from it, you know, towards the end after season 5. Honestly, the show wasn't as wonderful, in my opinion.
Because season five should have been the finale of the show.
Because that was supposed to be the ending. Yeah. So I don't know. I think that I agree with you guys. I think there's a lot of hesitation if we were to get a little wild with the story. I don't want to see a crap ton of Slayers like coming together for something. I don't know. I really have always loved the idea that
like you Helm's are Deep, the Helm's Deep of the Buffy universe, just all come together and have a massive battle scene, something like that.
They kind of already did that too. Yeah, but like, I just, I loved so much that there was a struggle between who you are without having a choice in it, because I think all of us are innately drawn to something or really good at something, and we probably have to fight within ourselves sometimes for that because it can take over everything else in our life, or it just consumes us, or, you know, that's just our identity. For some people, it's even just work. And having to make that your contention point, like, this is what I'm obligated to do, but I have to find ways through it. And that is only something, that pressure of that is only something that if you have the Slayer for Slayer die-off concept in play. So I am curious to see how they can make us attached to a new Slayer and how many we'll see. But also, will we get Allison Hannigan back? Will we get all of our characters, right? Like, are we going to get Xander and Giles and Willow. Nicholas Brendon
has become problematic as an actor.
He's like anti right now Hollywood, but maybe this could be his good, healthy return.
And of course, I'm really hoping that someone will come out of retirement, because I know Eliza Dushku isn't really doing acting anymore. But man, if we could see Faith again, that would be amazing.
Troy, there's an argument to be made. Hang on. There's an argument to be made that she wasn't doing acting before. So.
But she was really badass and pretty.
She was badass.
She was so good in Dollhouse and so good as Faith.
Very much, yeah.
What was the one where she was the mortician, where she went back in time?
I was just thinking about that. True Calling. True Calling.
I like that one. I did like that show.
And Zach Galifianakis is wildly different in that show than anything else he's done. I loved him in that show.
Yeah, he was different. He was almost like a person in that show, rather than between two ferns at all times.
Mm-hmm.
So the Joss Whedon of it all, since we're talking about this, and we are going to move into some actual other stuff besides Buffy, I promise.
But okay, because the movie didn't have Joss Whedon, the movie was great, so this will be fine without Joss.
It's completely
different. We don't need to talk about him. Completely we don't different. Need to give him any more credit.
The concepts are so different.
What? They're wildly different.
But they're both good.
But he also gave you the entire sense of humor and everything in both of those projects. So you're okay with him not being involved? That doesn't bother you or cause any issues? And here's the thing, if you don't know what he did, he was a philanderer, and he was also apparently sleeping with people under his direction, so that reported to him, and he could be an abusive boss. That's what he did. So however you see those things, that's what he did, and that's why he's been kind of outcast from Hollywood. Should he get a chance? He's not going to. He's not going to be part of this reboot, but do you think it will suffer without him? Do you care? Do you want, like, just keep moving forward? Keep turning the page?
I think there's enough fanfic out there, writer-type people, that you can tap into some of that and put something together that would be just as Joss-inspired without Joss having to be the inspiration.
That's what I'm hoping for. I do have, like I said, I do have some reservations and concerns, just because it's just such a close to my heart show, so I just want it to be good. But I'm certain that there are plenty of people, like you said, Troy, that could step in and emulate his voice and the way that he, you know, create a dialogue and the situations and all of that, the interactions. I'm certain someone else is as much of a Buffy fan as anyone and can recreate that.
I mean, any of those people that worked on the show originally, like SMG and James Marsters, like they could come together and get enough, you know, executive producer type backing to get the
David Boreanaz. David Boreanaz comes back.
Yeah. Oh, there's enough fun. People.
Oh my God. I gotta go do a rewatch after this.
He's a vampire. He looks 20 years older. I mean, come on. You're just gonna say, well, he finally aged up. Vampirism caught up to him.
I mean, he's thousands of years old, so maybe it finally started to rub off.
He stopped wearing, you know, eyeliner and stuff, so yeah. All right, well,
the powers that be are have been destroyed, and therefore aging vampires is a thing, and a slayer has to come,
or
because
just
a new
use
threat
de-aging
is coming.
Technology it'll look a little weird.
Hulu's got de-aging technology money.
That's Disney. Hulu is Disney. Disney has money.
That's true. Sure. All right. Well, let's move into our topic and get into what we have left of our topic. And so we're also getting a new iteration of Little House on the Prairie on Netflix, but that's not really a reboot. It's just a remake or an extension of the original books, following the books a little closer. So I guess I got to know, can we discuss like the differences between a reboot and a remake versus a sequel series for a minute? Like, what is this? Is it a reboot? Is it just a sequel series? What do you call something like Buffy? I'm saying it's still a reboot because you're rebooting the show. You're just connecting the characters / actors and storylines.
Well, I guess it depends on where the timeline comes in. Like if SMG is in the show and SMG is Buffy, and like then it's a continuation. It's not it's a reboot. It's not a remake.
That's the way I would look at it. But some people feel very differently. Well, a reboot is like you don't have original characters. I'm like, well, it could be theoretically, but I would think it wouldn't be. I would think you would have some connection if it's a reboot. You're just bringing it
back
to air.
Remake is taking the original story or content and trying to make adjustments to it or having different actors and things like that. A reboot is, hey, we may have some connections to this original show, but we're going to have a different focal point.
Or take the same show in a different direction, like the older version of Veronica Mars.
Right, exactly.
We call it a C-boot. I like that. Well, some people are going to fight us on that, I'm sure, online. Please feel free. Argue your case, what you think it should be called. But here's what we're doing with the rest of our topic, okay? Now we've had that discussion, we're going to work some magic. There's a ton of TV shows that have had resurgences, reboots, remakes, whatever the hell you want to call it as of late. Let's see what shows you want to bring back for a reboot, which means there has to be, here are the rules, you have to have a connection to the original series, either by a character or a returning actor. You can do it whatever way you choose, but we're going to pick three shows total. Two of them can be favorites of yours and just get an idea, you know, of what you would be interested in, but make sure that the show has been off the air for at least 5 years. And then one has to be a show in a genre you normally wouldn't even watch or you don't care for, but you have an interesting idea for. Make sense?
Yes, because we read the rules in advance.
Okay, just making sure. I wasn't sure if you actually did read the rules. So
yeah, we all prepare. That's John Davenport. Ooh. That's not Troy Davenport.
Bazinga!
Just kidding.
All right. Troy, we're starting with you. We're going to go round robin, so one at a time. So what's your first one that has to be a favorite, and how would you do it?
Of course, I'm going to pick Alias. I know people are surprised.
Mm-mm, not at all.
Well, they might be. They might be like, why is he doing Lost? It's like, because Lost should never be touched. Surprised. Lost was good by itself. Okay. Don't go there. Don't do it. But Alias, on the other hand, ends in a very interesting place. To me, I think you could take Alias and do a new generation of Alias in the sense that you have a college, whatever, same kind of, you know, time frame that, you know, Sydney Bristow was in the original series, but you go through the pilot trying to figure out like who this person is, and then you find out that it's actually Arvin Sloan's daughter.
Oh, okay.
And then in the second episode, we go back to Vaughn and Sydney's daughter, who had the skills and stuff because she does the puzzle in the finale, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the show is basically the two of them like trying to understand what their parents did and eventually unraveling the fact that it was actually, you know, Grandpa Bristow, who was responsible for basically burying Grandpa Sloan, I guess.
Yeah.
And then like they're like become sworn enemies of each other as they try to find, and the whole thing is to actually go back through Rimbaldi's stuff to actually find Sloan and see if they can get him unburied, because obviously he's alive because he drank the potion. So sure. Since he didn't die and he's buried alive down there, The two daughters or whatever are basically enemies trying to prevent the other one from getting there, and the other one is trying to save their dad or grandpa or whatever it would end up being.
I'm in. I'd watch that.
I kind of forgot a lot of the plot points of Alias, apparently. like the show, so let's do it.
Well, because when you get into Rimbaldi, right? That was Rimbaldi.
Well, Rimbaldi was from the beginning. It was the weird zombie red ball season 4 that those people off.
That was just nonsense. I really wish they would have done a spinoff with Rachel Gibson, right? Rachel Nichols' character. I like her a lot in Alias. So,
and maybe she comes back in this. Maybe she's like the head of an agency or something.
Sure. Maybe Bradley Cooper comes back. He's free.
No, probably not for this.
I don't know. They don't have that kind of Disney money.
Rachel Nichols recently showed up on a network drama for a couple episodes, so she could totally come back and do something.
I like her a lot. She's a good actress.
I love Continuum. She was so good in Continuum.
Yeah. All right, Amanda, your turn. What do you got? What's your first one?
All right. So my first one is going to be a reboot in the sense that it's only going to be connected. It's the same concept. I want the concept to stay the same. I just want it modernized. Mm-hmm. And I also want... it's Twilight Zone. We gotta hurry up and do this quickly, but William Shatner can do narration, and
what?
I
you want to pick like the oldest actor working to see if he could outlive the show or what?
No, I'm just saying, because that gets us our connection into, you know, from the reboot standpoint. But here's where I want the change to come from in terms of modernizing it and, you know, adding in today's type of horror and the stories that we could tell and things like that. Jason Blum produced. Okay. And written by Charlie Brooker, who is the creator and primary writer for Black Mirror.
Okay.
Oh. So I feel like it would just take some of the concepts that are very creative and innovative from Black Mirror, turn them all into horror episodes, right? And then we have Twilight Zone.
Or sci-fi. He had sci-fi.
Or sci-fi. Yeah. But I'm saying I like the horror more. Okay. So that's a personal thing. And if it's a Blumhouse production, right?
Yeah,
it'll probably be more centered horror.
I see where you're going.
Sure. So it's American Horror Story, Twilight Zone style.
Yeah.
I like it. Making it a little different. I like it. Well, my first one is Firefly. And no big surprise. My second one will definitely be a surprise, I think, for most people. But Firefly, but I would get Tim Minear involved, not Joss Whedon, obviously. The guy made great shows. I can't help it. Might have been a terrible person. Made great shows.
He just sucked as a boss, it sounds like, yeah. And did some really unethical things. But as a content creator, very talented.
Absolutely. Very.
Unfortunately, those two usually go hand in hand.
Yeah, too bad. What I would do is I would set it many years after Serenity, which is the movie that was spinned off from Firefly. River is the captain of Serenity now. I would have Mal and most of the crew already dead.
Oh.
Hang on. Let me finish. Okay. So maybe Mal still pops up in flashbacks. You know, yes. Maybe he's wearing his rookie outfit. I don't know. But then I think you set up a situation where River's basically living a retired life when she gets wind of the Alliance rising up again, right? And conducting nefarious experiments. So she rounds up a crew of desperados to kind of stop what happened to her.
Rough riders. No, you don't want nada.
Okay. Easy. Easy. I don't want anybody getting slapped here. So she wants to stop what happened to her from happening to anyone else. There would be an overarching story for the season, of course, but then there'd be mini plots for each episode, kind of like how the show ran itself when it was on. And again, Mal could pop up in flashbacks, unveiling maybe different information about the Alliance as we go that she learned in the years before he died. That's how I would do it.
I'm on board, Captain.
Dig it.
Troy, you would watch that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would watch that.
All right.
I like that you did it after Serenity. If it wasn't after Serenity, I'd be like, well, then I have Serenity.
Yeah.
Because you're doing it after Serenity, it works.
Okay. Woohoo.
And River is such a great character.
I love River.
But I would have to have some Mal. I'm not okay if I don't.
That's why it's a flashback. That way you still get a little taste of him because people initially, and I think you show him in flashbacks or something.
Related to Serenity, like things that we didn't see. Sorry, that wasn't your idea. Go ahead.
No, you show him in basically like you show him in flashbacks, but in the first episode, you kind of would position it like these things are happening throughout the show. You don't know it's a flashback and that he's actually dead until the end, because that would be like, holy.
Oh, my gosh. Do you want no one to have a heart left anymore?
Yes, that's how you get people to come back.
That's brutal.
Like, what happened to him? We got to find out what happened.
You just said don't kill Buffy, but now you're saying kill Mal.
But you don't say how he dies until the end of the series.
It's painful to think about, but it does sound really good.
He could even still be a series regular that way. You could have flashbacks to past times, and he's in every episode that way. So you could play with it. Mm-hmm. You could flirt with it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Show number two, Troy.
My second one is a little web series that existed that eventually got stitched into an actual two-part pilot for a show that should have been going on because it would have been so much better.
Mm-hmm.
Than the sequel to Battlestar Galactica 2004. After Battlestar Galactica 2004, there was a series called Caprica, which had some really interesting concepts on what the Cylon technology was about, but was actually a really bad show. So they decided to do BSG Blood and Chrome.
Yeah.
And what BSG Blood and Chrome was the early days of Bill Adama, who we know is the Admiral, obviously, in the 2004 reboot. So this was the first missions that the humans went on to see if the Cylons actually still existed after their expulsion to space post Caprica and what happened at the end of Caprica. So like those missions of, are the Cylons out there? Do we prepare for a Cylon attack? And the things that Bill Adama and company would run into in that kind of young, gruff, cocky way. So I would have loved to have seen that series continue. So let's go ahead and bring it back, because anybody can play Bill Adama at this point, because it's not.
I'm all over that.
I think James Edward Olmos, right?
I wanted more of that when it was on. So I think that would be great. Yep. All about it.
Space Rangers.
All right. Well, my next one is still a show that I liked. I haven't gotten into my bad one yet, just so you know. So Walker, Texas Ranger.
Oh,
did not see this coming.
Yeah. If you don't know me, I don't really like Westerns, but I watched this show a lot growing up. A lot. So
wasn't it already rebooted though?
I don't care. This is my idea.
Okay.
All right. That was a remake.
That's not a reboot.
Yep. Okay.
Still, my idea is unique and different, Troy. So,
okay.
I want Chuck Norris. Again, we got to hurry up on some of these.
You got to start writing scripts. Yeah.
To be a supporting character. He seems at first like he's a lead character, and then it starts to transition throughout the first season.
And he's dead, and it's actually flashbacks the whole time.
But he's teaching his grandson about the ways and how to be basically who he was after the kid's father had died, which is Chuck Norris's kid in this situation. And so he's helping his grandson become basically and be a father figure. And then eventually he's going to pass away in the show, and it's going to be so sad. And the son is going to, or the grandson's going to be the one who's like taking over then.
Ooh.
That's my idea.
He's going to roundhouse kick the tombstone in the face. I like it. I mean, it's Walker, Texas Ranger, so it should be.
What's that supposed to mean?
I don't know. I'm still surprised that that's the one you went to, and I think that's actually, I would watch that. I think that's a cool idea. I think there's a chance he actually passes away while filming the show.
I know.
But
I'm also just shocked that this is something that Amanda actually liked watching and the genre versus putting it into her, like, this is the genre that I don't watch. That's more shocking to me.
But she said she loved watching it.
Yeah, it's a nostalgia thing too. Like, I watched it when I was really, really little with my great grandmother. So, yeah, so it has like a soft spot. It was just like, literally would shut the shit down if she couldn't watch her soap operas and her Chuck Norris. So,
that's funny.
It became very important to me and embedded in me that this is just something you enjoy. Regardless. And maybe that's why I got straight away from Westerns, is because I watched so much of this growing up.
Honest, serious question, though. If you did this, rebooted it this way, would you keep it? Because that was a very clean, safe show overall.
Ooh, would you go HBO mature?
Would you go more mature or keep it the way that it was?
See, I could see both. I could see...
Your show, what would you do?
I would love for it to be more adult, obviously. I'm all for adult content.
Well, like Chuck Norris just starts banging a chicken. Sorry.
No, but just like, I don't know. Think about like more of like a grungier version or a less well put together version.
Okay. Down and dirty.
Who swears Walker. A lot. Yeah.
And Chuck Norris doesn't like it. He needs him to grow up and be mature. Here we go. Now we got a show. He's like, why can't you speak like a human being? Why are you swearing so much? You know, only because he doesn't swear. Chuck Norris doesn't like swearing, if you didn't know. So I could see that working in and being like a really interesting component.
I like that too. And then when Chuck Norris passes away in the show,
he matures.
The grandson matures and, you know, tries changing his ways.
I like it.
But then part of the battle of the second season is sometimes you create a reputation. And so then you have a hard road coming over that too.
Sure.
We should get paid for this.
We really, yeah, I feel like somebody should be writing us a check. And it could be you if you go to patreon.com/TheHollywoodOutsider, where there's a bonus episode of Armageddon Bad Movie Night. Go check it out. It's there right now. My next show.
Armageddon.
Yes. Man and I had a lot of fun. And I learned a lot about Amanda that she presents facts as opinions or something along those lines.
Opinions as facts.
Opinions as facts.
Something like that. Yeah.
As I told someone in our group.
When Chuck Norris presents an opinion, it is a fact.
That's right.
They feel like facts to me.
That's funny.
Those are called feelings.
No, they're still facts to me.
You gotta listen to that episode, Troy, because it's pretty funny how Amanda just basically pretends like she likes Armageddon for half the episode. It's pretty funny.
I'm a people pleaser. What can I say?
I guess. And then you hold her to it. She's like, I really didn't like any of this. It was really stupid.
And then I just trash it.
All right. Banshee is my my second one, Banshee. If you've never seen it, I love Banshee. But if you didn't know what it was, it stars Homelander, Anthony Starr. He's a convict. He gets out of jail and he ends up taking the place of Lucas Hood, who's a sheriff of Banshee, Pennsylvania. And basically he just becomes a sheriff who doesn't have to play by the rules anymore because, you know, he's not really a cop. He can do whatever the hell he wants. And it's like a vicious, brutal, sexy show. I'd love to see Lucas Hood return, name it after a new town that he finds himself in, or you just keep the same name and you just say it's a new town. I think that's fine. And he takes up the mantle of sheriff to help thwart a local criminal element. And since he never plays by the rules, it's a bit of a frontier justice kind of show. I would love to see like a revisit of that character in a new town.
It sounds fun. It's kind of like that one's a down and dirty one too, right?
Oh man, the fight scenes are brutal. Absolutely brutal. And he's it's hard to root for him sometimes, but you still do. You still do.
Can we have John Bernthal guest star?
Oh, he would fit. The Punisher would fit in that
I
world.
Know. That's sure. what I was thinking. Sure. I was like, this is giving me Punisher vibes. Why not? We got to have him in.
All right. So the last one, and then we're out of here. Well, then we'll do some reviews. But the last one has to be a show in a genre you would not typically watch or a show you honestly didn't care for, but you have an idea. Troy, amaze us.
For me, I never really got into this show. And I should have because, I mean, you literally had Adam Scott. You had Jane Lynch. You had Ryan Hansen, Jennifer Coolidge, Megan Mullally, Jennifer Garner. There's so many people in this show, right? And it's Party Down. Now, Party Down had a very interesting concept when it started. It's basically all these people working at a catering company as they're trying to make it big in Hollywood. And it had one season back in 2010. And it didn't do so great in the ratings, so basically kind of like went to the wayside. But then everybody's like, bring it back. So they brought it back for a 6-episode revival in 21. And then there was actually a third season that premiered in 2023, which was actually categorized as a limited series revival or whatever you want to call it. I never liked the concept because it just felt kind of pretentious. I don't know. Like, it's just like everybody's trying to make it in Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. So my idea is let's bring it back. But it's like in the Downton Abbey, you know, the Help kind of style. But it's around Washington, D.C. and state dinners. So it's the people that work in the White House or people that work in these government catering type things. So it's like all of the things that you might hear whispered or intel or things that you might hear shared that you're not supposed to be privy to as far as classifications, you're in the hallway or whatever. And then that spawns into hilarity or comedy or drama, whichever you want to go with. But I think that would be really interesting, like to get to know the caterers around the state dinners at the White House.
Interesting. Yeah, I like really that because you're basically going from a more, I don't even know what you want to call it, but like Hollywood rich, I guess, Hollywood wealthy type of focus into a political eye and the things that will come out around that and scandals and different things I could see would be fun.
And it moves it from a half-hour comedy, which I usually don't watch, to the more 44 to a one-hour drama, potentially.
I like it.
A comedic drama, though.
All right, Amanda, your turn.
All right, so my last one is a show that I've tried watching, admittedly, a few times, and I've never gotten past the first episode because I get really bored.
Okay.
And I feel really bad that I'm admitting this, but we all have faults. And I've just never been able to get through Gossip Girl.
Oh my gosh.
What? Wow.
I know. What? I know. So, and I knew you were going to feel this way, Troy. So here's so you're my idea.
Switch it to Gossip Boy. It's going to star Justin Baldoni. It's going to, no, sorry. Something else.
So I'm going to have Kristen Bell return for a modernized rendition, but she's not the narrator. She is now the main character. One of the issues that I always had with Gossip Girl, and Troy, I know you're going to hate me for this too.
Don't spoil it.
Leighton Meester.
It's been gone a while.
No, just Leighton Meester.
Oh, you don't like her?
Yes. I can't stand her as an actress.
I quit.
I know.
Are you a big fan of her?
I know. I'm so sorry.
Oh, I love Leighton Meester.
Okay. I love Adam Brody, and that's why I feel I'm like he could have done better because I just don't like her as an actress.
The only reason Adam Brody exists because I loved him as Seth on the OC. Otherwise, I'd kill him because I like Leighton Meester that much.
That is wild. This is the wildest thing you've this ever said out loud.
It's getting dark. So let's lighten it back up.
So anyway, she becomes the main character that we follow. And someone else is the narrator. Hell, if you want to give Leighton a job, she can narrate. How about that? They'll flip-flop.
So wait, I never watched it. So Leighton Meester was the... I thought it was Blake Lively was the star.
Blake Lively and Leighton both are like the go-between. They're kind of the bitchy counterparts. They're friends with their enemies, with their friends with their enemies.
But Kristen Bell was the narrator?
She was the narrator because you're trying to figure out who Gossip Girl was. Who's the person with the inside scoop?
Mm-hmm. So it had to be a substitute voice, so to speak.
Correct.
Couldn't be. Okay. All right.
Yeah, because that's how you don't ever know like who it actually is.
Got it. Okay.
And so I want Kristen Bell to then be our, you know, our focal point, and that keeps it tied, right? Now we have a reboot. But I want a different narrator, and I want the story, when I say modernized, I want it to be like social media gossip and putting things out on the internet that has a lot of like ripple effects and stuff. Maybe they, I don't know, just create like a social media thing. But I think if you were to modernize it in that way, it could be a lot of fun to play with.
But and you're making Belle the focal point. So is this like Karens on social media? Like Karens fighting each other back and forth all the time? On social media, I'm trying to figure like...
Well, you still have... No. You still have a Gossip Girl.
Sure.
But she is like on the internet. I mean, maybe her username is just Gossip Girl. But it's all, instead of the way it was done before, because of the time period it was in, now you have a lot more wide span impact because of social media and the communications that you can use that way.
Okay.
Or YouTube videos, things like that.
But it's about adults, since you're using Belle as the main character versus kids, like the original show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Set in New York or moving it to a different locale?
Okay, you're asking a lot of detailed questions.
Really down in this. I didn't realize we were in an interrogation.
I feel like I'm in the hot seat.
Is this Gossip Cop?
God damn it, if you're going to bring up an idea about Gossip Girl, you better have all the facts and they better be right.
Just saying, you have to do your research if you're not going to watch the show.
Dear Lord.
Wow. I think it sounds interesting. I still probably wouldn't watch it, but it sounds interesting.
I feel like it'll just make it a little less teenager.
That's what it needs, too.
A little bit more adult. And Kristen Bell is fantastic. She can keep anybody's attention span. And she's sassy and quippy as this character in this.
She can keep Adam Brody's attention span.
Facts. Yes, she can.
All right. Well, mine.
And nobody wants this.
Mine. Yeah. Strap in. Okay. Not strap on. Silk Stockings. So both fit. It was a 90s.
I don't even know what this is.
I'm still like mind blown that this is where you went.
You don't know what this is, Amanda?
I have no idea. And I did not research it.
She was probably too young for when this came
out. Yeah, probably. It's a 90s TV show. It was like a sexy version of Law & Order SVU in a way, which is, I know it sounds creepy, but let me finish. So they saw
the pictures and posters are so funny. I love
it. It's cheesy, ridiculous. It was on at like midnight.
Oh, it came out 4 days before the final episode was 4 days before I was born. Okay.
There you go. It's been a while, right? That it's been up. So they solve sex crimes of passion among the super rich in Palm Beach, Florida. I mean, it was very late night TV. So there's a lot of sizzling and not like sex crimes, more like people that get murdered because of lust and that sort of thing. So there's always a lot of sex and sexiness going on. And it followed detectives Christopher Lorenzo and Rita
this
Lance.
This is like their motto and tagline for the show. I think it's hilarious.
What is it?
If you were to just Google Silk Stockings and go to images and start looking at the movie posters or the posters for the show, the quotes are a sexy sensation, the sexiest cop team on TV. Like, all of them is about the sexiness, and I think it's hilarious that that's, like, their promotional tool. They're like, yeah, we're sexy cops,
yeah,
and we're going to talk about
sex
it.
Sex crime.
That's what it was, yeah, sexy crime.
But it's funny. Yeah.
Sexy crime.
I remember once there was a commercial that said, sexy cops solving sexy crimes, and I'm like, what's a sexy crime? what exactly is a sexy crime?
I can't imagine somebody sitting in a room with, like, probably a bunch of white dudes sitting around a table, like, what do we want this ad to say? sexy cops investigating sexy crimes.
Yep. And I hated
someone
the
got
show.
Paid for that.
I hated the show. But if you modernize it, you bring Rob Estes back as Lorenzo, make him captain. You follow a couple new cops who dress sexy and they deal with the same kind of concepts, but you treat them a little bit more seriously instead of like cheesier than Fondue Night or whatever. I think this could be a much more modern version of SVU in a different location, a sunnier location, not New York, that sort of thing. And I'd watch that. So that I would watch. That's why I said Silk Stockings.
Denver's the sunniest place around.
More days than Florida.
Hey, it's the Mile High City.
There you go.
It is.
All right. That's
right itself.
Okay, we've kind of run long, but before we move on, I do want to mention some of our listener picks, because we've always put this in our group, or we try to put it in our Facebook group and ask people what they think. Lauren Thomas Williams, he'd like to see Casey Wilson from Happy Endings get a solo series about her character leaving Chicago and starting her own search for love. I love that show, and I think it deserved a fourth season. All right, there's one. Chris Frid, I would love to see, well, with this name, of course you would. I would love to see Dark Shadows come back as a Next Generation type thing, but with a nod to past events. Okay. John McCarthy, simpatico. He's with me on Firefly. Dave Courtney says Sliders. And then I have about 5 hours to rant about the head-scratching cancellation of the Quantum Leap reboot. So upset over that one. Yeah, that is one where they could bring that back. I don't think they did that show justice. And two more. Josh Steima said he would like a miniseries following up with Vic Mackey from The Shield. That ending is perfect, but I would love to see what happened all these years later. Oh my God, if he's still got a desk job and he hasn't gone anywhere in his career. Lastly, I would love this. Barbara Harris, Jericho is a good series. It would be timely to reboot it. There are so many kind of different kinds of catastrophes and governmental influence that they could definitely tie into that. I could see Jericho definitely coming back. I don't know if it was popular enough to reboot, but my God, get some nuts out there, right? Get some nuts out there. And I think we can make that one. Get some nuts out there. And I think we can make that one happen. All good ideas. All good ideas, guys. We got to move on though. That's it for the topic. We do have reviews. We're going to get to those in a second, but first we got some upcoming attractions. You guys want to mention those real quick? If you would, things that are coming up, on the 7th.
Happy to. Love Hurts is coming. A realtor is pulled back into the life he left behind after his former partner in crime resurfaces with an ominous message. With his crime lord brother also on his trail, he must confront his past and the history he never fully buried. Stars Ke-Hai Kwan, Ariana DeBose, and Marshawn Lynch. This one's going to be really fun to check out. I think everybody from the Goonies was at the premiere.
Yes, so fun.
Which I don't understand how Sean Astin became Chunk and Chunk became Sean Astin.
Stop it!
Oh
my God.
You're so mean.
You're so mean.
Don't laugh, Aaron.
No. Amanda, go. I'm trying.
All right. We have hard eyes. It's
I'm
a
doing
rom-com.
Truffle That's shuffle. Amethyst. Sorry.
That's Amethyst. We have Hard Eyes, a rom-com slasher. For the past several years, the Hard Eyes killer has wreaked havoc on Valentine's Day by stalking and murdering romantic couples. This Valentine's Day, no couple is safe.
Aww.
We also have Apple Cider Vinegar coming to Netflix. The life of wellness guru Belle Gibson, who had a large social media following where she pretended to be suffering from cancer, but keeping the disease under control using self-care therapies, she confessed that none of it was true. This is the upcoming on Netflix with Caitlin Dever.
Yep.
Exciting.
A lot of good stuff. A lot of good stuff. But that's it for the main episode. Guys, we're going to get into reviews. We've got reviews of Companion and Green and Gold. We're going to start with Companion first. But before I leave, is there anything recent film or TV recommendations you want to recommend to other people before we head to the reviews?
Nothing new, but I have started The Severance Season 2, and so far so good.
Episode 2 was really slow.
No. See, Episode 1 was really slow. Episode 2 is where you went, oh.
Oh, maybe I have them backwards.
You have to watch 1 and 2 together. If you're starting Season 2, watch 1 and 2 in one sitting. It'll make way more sense.
I don't know. I still felt like 2 was kind of boring.
Let Troy mansplain your enjoyment. Go ahead.
He's being Troy Davenport, I mean John Davenport. Right.
You're not going to like the show. It's really not your style. You just don't bother.
That's funny. You know? That's funny. Anything else, Amanda? Anything from you?
Nada. You always ask me this, and I have nothing.
Okay. Well, check out the OJ. The OJ documentary on Netflix is actually pretty good.
Yeah, I heard that was really good. Also, Paradise. I picked up Paradise on Aaron's recommendation. Really, really good concept. I highly recommend.
Oh, yeah, because we haven't been on the show since that came out, have we? I don't
think so. Right, because it dropped like 2 or 3 episodes at once. And episode 4 is airing this week.
It's on Hulu. It has Sterling K. Brown as Secret Service agent who is investigating a crime revolving around the former president. That's all I want to say. But man, there's a lot of mystery to that. And it's got a cool concept that you don't know what's going until the end of the first episode. And then it's like, oh, this opened up a whole different set of rules.
And it's written by Dan Fogelman, who did This Is Us with Sterling K. Brown. So there's the two of them to be back. I promise you won't cry in every episode, but I did shed a little bit of a tear in the first one. It had a little bro moment.
That's good. That's good stuff.
I felt it.
Really, really good stuff. All right, let's get into Companion, and then we'll do Green and Gold, and then we'll be out of here.
Yeah, Companion is up first. It's a 2025 American science fiction thriller film written and directed by Drew Hancock. Stars Sophie Thatcher and Jack Quaid as a couple on a weekend getaway with friends at a remote cabin that unravels into chaos after a revelation that one of the guests is a companion robot.
What?
Aaron, you told me that I would love this. I obviously understand why, because robots.
Yeah, family. Yep.
Well, I don't know if I want to be banging my sister or something, you know?
Easy.
I mean, this is a companion robot after all. But why would I like this specifically? What is it about Companion that's made you go, oh yeah, Troy, this one's definitely up your alley.
Yeah. And I'm not going to spoil anything. So people you can calm down. You know, if you're worried about it, I would say if you don't want to know anything, just going blind, well then leave now, I guess. I don't know what to tell you, but
fast forward 2 minutes.
It has, without spoiling anything, for people that will understand, it has reflections of Westworld. And what I mean by that is it doesn't take place in a theme park or anything like that, but it gives you inflections of the same kind of morality tale, sense of self, sense of being. What does it mean to be alive? What is real identity? That sort of thing. Like, what is your own, what does it mean to be yourself? Like, what does that mean? What is a reality? What is it? And, you know, are only humans the ones that get to take that point of self? Or if there are companions or other kinds of robots out there, shouldn't they have a sense of self if they have some kind of agency? That's asking big questions like that. But it's also kind of just a wild murder thriller, too.
And the question I think everybody wants to know is, maybe not everybody, some people want to know, like, does the robot know that they're a robot? Because those are the kind of robot movies that are interesting.
Are they sentient?
Or yeah, do they? Or not they're sentient, but like, does a robot know that they're robots, right? Or do they assume that they're sentient and then they find out they're a robot and then they're like, what the fuck?
I think that is stuff that you have to see the movie to uncover, because there are elements to unpack in that they're exploring, that they're playing with. Basically, there's a party. They all get together, a bunch of friends. One of them as a companion, and things go awry. I really don't want to tell people more than that. I think the trailer kind of don't watch the trailer. It really tells you too much. Like, it gives a lot of it away, but that's the basic plot. I think that's enough to go in. Just know you're going to get a murdery comedy thriller vibe with a sci-fi tint.
Like, what was it? The Babysitter, where they become the vampires.
Sure. Something like that.
Not quite that campy.
It's not. Yeah. It's somewhere between that and Deadly Friend with Christy Swanson. And if you remember that, you get that reference. Oh,
Deadly Friend was good.
Yeah,
I like that one.
There we go. That's when I fell in love with Christy Swanson.
For sure. How is Sophie and Jack in this? Like, do they, the chemistry there, do they play off each other well?
Man, I got to tell you, like, Jack Quaid, this is the first movie the first thing I can think of that I've seen him in where I saw shades of his dad. He always looks like kind of the Timu version of Dennis Quaid. You know what I mean? Like, he's not, sorry, that's harsh. He's a great actor. I really enjoy him. He's very funny. But his dad had that, you know, kind of sexy Texas thing going on. And you just don't really see that with Jack Quaid's performances. He kind of plays different characters, a little more goofier and aloof. There are shades of seeing his dad in this, which I thought was really cool, because in those moments, it kind of makes you feel like he's a little unpredictable. You don't know which side of the fence he might be on. Sophie Thatcher, on the other hand, I have only seen her in Heretic. I haven't seen, is it Yellow Jackets that she's in? I haven't seen that. But I know in Heretic, she was fantastic. So when I came into this and saw that she's, you know, it's a starring role for her, she once again blew me away. I thought she was great in Heretic. I think she's better here. She really makes, she gives a commanding performance and kind of puts a stamp on her future right here.
No, and she's great in Yellow Jackets. Love okay. It.
I kind of want to check that show out because of her, literally just because of her.
Season one, amazing. Season two.
That's what I've heard. That's why I haven't checked it out yet. And I was getting there. Then you're like pulling me right off the tracks.
Yeah, I'm just looking out for you. That's all.
I appreciate it.
But the first season's good. I like the first season.
Yeah, and there's a fun cast to play here. Lucas Gage is always good. He was also in, you know, Roadhouse and several other things. Smile too. Rupert Friend is in here. We actually interviewed him years ago. He's unrecognizable, which is great. Another reason, don't watch the trailer. You know, it's just overall, it's a fun cast and good collection of characters.
What about like environment sound? Does it add to the horror type of element, even though it's kind of, you know, campy in the woods kind of feel as well?
No, it definitely has a cabin in the woods kind of feel because it's out there in what's going on. I don't think it's as original as some people are kind of alluding to. Like I said, when you see it, you'll definitely see reflections and inflections of Westworld. You just will. And people might think, well, that's just a big giveaway. Not really. I mean, Westworld played with a lot of different themes, but you'll understand them pretty quickly. But it's still very interesting and the twists are really fun. So it's a solid thriller. I really enjoyed it. It's a bright spot for 2025 and it's only February.
Yeah, and it seems like it actually made its budget back, right? $10 million to produce so far. And
people are like, well, it did. It flopped. Like, what kind of expectation did you have on a low-budget thriller? Like, you thought this was going to blow the doors off? No, this is going to be a word-of-mouth movie that I hope builds traction while it's in theaters, but if not, it's going to find a healthy life on streaming.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, because you're going to get, like, the, you know, the teenage, high school, college range of people that'll be watching this one and talking about it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But Companion, if you had one, Aaron, what would you give it on a scale of 1 to 10 for a price of admission?
Oh, if I had one, based on what I saw here, I'd probably pay a lot. But
how about the movie, though?
Oh, yeah. But the movie itself, $8. I really, I think this is a big bright spot for horror or thrillers already for 2025, which is a plus. And now we're going to go to a Green Bay Packer kind of movie, but really it's a little bit more than that. It's a little deeper. So this is Green and Gold. Okay, I'm here with Scott Clark from the Gaming Outsider and Packers Fan Podcast. How you doing, Scotty?
I'm doing all right, man. A long time no, I can't say see, but long time no, no recording podcast. A show together.
Yeah, are you excited about doing this?
Absolutely, dude. Anytime I get to sit down and chat with you guys again, it's always a pleasure.
And you're going to put this in Packers Fan Podcast too, right? Is that the idea?
Yes. So if you were hearing this, you're either hearing this through the Hollywood Outsider or Packers Fan Podcast. So hello to everybody.
Yeah. Hello. I'm Aaron with the Hollywood Outsider. If you don't know who I am. So we will.
Super fan Aaron, as you're known on Packers Fan Podcast.
There we go. I didn't know I was a super fan. I'm just a regular fan who doesn't blame the refs. Yeah, that's right. One of those. So we got to see this early. Unfortunately, we got to record it after the release, but it's in theaters at the time of this recording. It's still in theaters, limited release. And before we get into the movie, I got to ask you, are you surprised? I just don't get why you would wait until after the season to release this.
I don't know. Maybe they were banking on Green Bay making it.
Hell of a gamble.
That is quite a gamble. I guess the thought is if they don't make it, then Packers fans have something to look forward to. You know?
Sure.
Yeah. Besides the Super Bowl?
Sure.
I mean, we all watch the Super Bowl even if our team's not in it, right?
I guess that's part of it, right? And I like that this is produced by Culver's. You get great product placement.
There's like Culver's containers on the dash of the truck.
It's very direct. The best part, before we get into the details, my favorite part about the movie is I expected it to kind of be a lot of product placement, and it just ended up being a really good movie. Just like a really good movie. Which
and
is
it and it was, even though the theme is Green Bay Packers, and if you're a Packers fan, I do recommend you check it out, just because, you know, you'll see a lot of things you do, but it's not the main crux of the movie. It's more of a I'm not going to say afterthought, but it's just like part of the setup, if that makes sense.
It's a family drama. I mean, it's really like targeted toward people that
we should
appreciate
give the title of the movie.
Well, yeah, Green and Gold. That's what we're talking about. It's people. It's a movie that appreciates community, right? It appreciates farmers and small town communities and you're appreciating your neighbor, that sort of thing. Like, it's a real down home way we grew up kind of community film.
Very familiar for me. I think at one point I had to explain to you what it meant for deer to be in rut season.
Yeah, I didn't know what that meant. when they're in a rut, usually it means they hit my car.
Yeah,
that's jetting down the highway.
That happens as well too. They're just going after a different piece of tail light.
Jesus Christ! I'll line them up. You knock them down. All right. Well, yeah, so Green and Gold. So you know what this is about. Is Craig T. Nelson stars as Buck? He's an aging Wisconsin farmer with dreams of his family's land falling to his next in line, his granddaughter Jenny, who's played by Madison Lawler. He's devoted. He's hardworking, and he's a diehard Packers fan. Like, I assume everyone that listens to your podcast, right?
Yes.
It'd be weird if they didn't like the team, right? They're just,
you'd be surprised. Hey, we have some listening. Non-Packers fans listening.
Well, good, because this movie will appeal to them. All right. There's some football talk, sure, but I think even if you're a Bears fan and you hate the Packers, you still will.
Although
like it.
There is a really great scene where Buck confronts a Bears fan that made me want to stand up and cheer. Just a little bit.
True. Well, because you see Bears fans a certain way. Right.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
I understand. I don't do. I have a lot of Bears fans in my family, so I'm kind of split down the middle. I have to accept both sides. Pretty clean. But he's like a real Buck. He's a diehard Packers fan. He named his cattle after the '68 championship team. Names his pig after Ditka. That's funny. Meanwhile, Jenny is very unsure if this land is her future, because Buck sees her as, you know, taking over, and her mother had died, his daughter had died previously. And he sees her as the future, but she's really interested in a music career. She wants to be a singer. She kind of moonlights singing on when she can.
Singer-songwriter.
Yeah, singer-songwriter when she's not working on a farm, absolutely. But Buck is a stubborn Midwesterner. He sees legacy as the most important aspect of family. Jenny wants the world to hear her voice. Well, Buck's already lost his daughter, as I talked about, and it's 1993. Buck has not modernized his farm. His farm is losing money left and right. The bank is going to take it from him. So there's a back and forth between the bank, and Jenny motivates him to take a crazy random deal that a guy just kind of throws out in the ether, where that if the Packers win the Super Bowl, the bank will give him a whole another year to pay with no interest. But if they lose, they don't go to the Super Bowl, he has to pay it off the next day. That's the deal. Mm-hmm. It's an insane development, but you know, Packers fans, they believe in Title Town. So he takes it, and that's the crux of the movie, but really it's about family and saving a farm. What do you see it as? Like, what kind of movie do you see this as?
I mean, I see it as a movie that actually centers more around Jenny than it does Buck.
Very
much. You know, with Craig T. Nelson's name on the bill, I kind of expected him to be the main character, and he is a prominent figure, but this is really Jenny's story. And it's really fun to see her go from, you know, farm girl to attempted singer-songwriter, and she kind of flips the script every now and then. And it's all about the drama between her and Buck, and between her and the other farmhand, and her and this already established musician that she's trying to get in good with, but I think the core theme here is what you already said, which is community, which Packers fans know that, you know, the Green Bay Packers are one of the only team that's like owned by the city of Green Bay, right? It's a very community driven football team. So it slides very well into this whole theme of family and community. And I think one of the other themes that's really present here, you and I kind of had a conversation while we were watching it, is Buck's stubbornness, because he very much wants to he wants Jenny to carry on his legacy of this farm the way that he does it. He doesn't want to do it the newfangled ways and all this. And there's a really tense moment between the two of them where you kind of see both sides, but you also see that he's kind of an asshole.
Yeah. I kept saying, I'm like, well, Buck's a dick, you know?
But it's not so much that he is just a hard-headed old-timer that is just set in his ways. His intentions for wanting things to live on the way that they are actually is pure in intent.
Yes, it is.
It's more about keeping, you know, the land fertile and doing right by the land, as opposed to this is something that I created, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And it's a very interesting dynamic because you can see that there's friction between these two. Obviously, it's a tale as old as time, right? Old versus new. Mm-hmm. People are stuck in their ways and the new generation wants to find a different way. It's hard when you're older, as I'm starting to realize, to let go of things that you have set in your own ways, right? Like to look at the younger generation and go, okay, maybe your way is better. Maybe I should just try it your way. It's difficult to give up something you know.
Yeah, our way is definitely Sigma.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But I do also love, because I found this with my own kids, right? Where Buck, he changes in terms of how he represents himself and how he acts when he's with Jenny when football's involved. Because that's a connective tissue that he doesn't have otherwise. And he's able to kind of let go of his own personal, because that we're just celebrating a sport. We're all watching the same sport, the same way, played the same way. And I love that aspect of the movie because it kind of really illustrates why football is so important to fans.
Yes. I mean, I actually related very much to the numerous scenes where they're sitting in church and looking at their watches going, kickoff's going to be in 15 minutes. We got to go, which was, you know, compounded when this bet was made. And they actually had a real skin in the game. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. Both he and Jenny get up in the middle of a service to go to make sure that they watch the game, which, you know, I grew up with that, man.
Been there.
Because, you know, church was at 10 o'clock and then you have a mother that wants to sit and talk and gab and it's still a half hour drive home. You know, you want to see kickoff, you know, when you're a kid. So I felt that pain.
My grandfather was the pastor and he was the same way. I mean, he's just like, well, it's time to go. You can't get home before kickoff.
Exactly.
That's just a Midwestern staple. I'm sure it's a staple in many football towns, right?
Mm-hmm.
But that element of it, that's probably the only thing where I would say that's football-y, but I think that could appeal to people in a lot of different ways. But anytime you have a shared hobby, right, with your mom, dad, kids, whatever it is, it's the same element. It's just that sense of bringing you together to kind of put your, that whatever has you at odds, bring you in the same room and have a great
time. Finding that common bond, that thing that you're both into. And that happened even before the bet. You know, she still watched the games with him. And it was more important to her because it was important to him. You know what I mean? She definitely got more invested later on, but it was still, that's what we do on Sundays is we watch the Packers.
Yep. Absolutely. So what did you think, you know, when you come into respect with the performances, right? You talk about Craig T. Nelson. Let's talk about him first. He's the name on the marquee. Being a football movie, I thought he might be the coach. Huh? You're welcome. Nobody? Anybody? I had silence. But he's actually a supporting role, like you said. Like, it's really Jenny who's the lead. So do you still think he shines through as Craig T. Nelson, or does he feel like he's relegated to the background? How did you see it?
He still shines to me, but not he's doesn't overshadow anybody else. You know what I mean? Like he's not just a fixture. He's a very important part of this story. It's just not his story, even though it kind of is. It's more Jenny's story and how she reacts to everything. It's hard for me to say how much range he had with Buck because he felt very much like Craig T. Nelson. You know what I mean? Like kind of a coach with less sense of humor. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
How about you?
I wouldn't say impressed because I've always liked Craig T. Nelson. He's kind of, I mean, I've all the way back to Action Jackson days. Like I've been a fan of his for a long time. I like him. I think he elevates everything. But I was surprised kind of how small his role was in comparison, but I wasn't upset about it. I actually really, liked the performance of Madison Lawler, which I'm going to just segue to her. So she has this whole arc where she's trying to become a singer-songwriter, and, you know, she's kind of working with this artist, producer, aspiring star who's played by Brandon Sklenar, who was on 1923 Yellowstone. He was on It Ends With Us. So his career is kind of burgeoning, and he, you know, does what he always does, which is smolders in the corner, but this time he's playing songs. You know, his role is very small. What did you think about her performance? Because as we said, she's the lead, she's the star of the movie.
I absolutely loved her. She had such a range in this film, and I'm not familiar with her at all. Have you seen her in anything else?
I was not familiar with her. No.
Okay. I mean, she plays the tough and tumble farm girl to a T, and you think that's just who she is. And then she goes and she meets Billy, Brendan Sklenar's character, and she's vulnerable as hell. Mm-hmm. She is fumbling at words. She's nervous, and not because, oh, it's a hot guy that I want to get with. It's that she's trying to impress and she wants to make a good impression so that she can start her music career. And seeing her go back and forth between that and then dealing with Aaron, mm-hmm. the farmhand, that you know, there's like it's not really a love triangle, because she's not really interested in Billy. Right?
No, she's not. No.
But
she's not,
but Aaron is definitely threatened by him.
Yeah. There's definitely a little bit of that. She impressed the hell out of me too. I mean, like I said, I was surprised she was the lead. Once I realized that she is the lead, I'm like, okay, this is much better than I expected. Following her, seeing someone young dealing with a farm. I grew up, my aunt had a farm when I was growing up, so I have some experience with farms. I didn't know what, you know, deers and heat sounded, well, was called or anything, but she didn't have any. I was on a farm pretty frequently, and I remember what that was like. There's elements of it that are pretty cool, but the chores are a bitch, and, you know, kind of all of that goes hand in hand, and it shows her growing as the film matures as well, in terms of, oh, this is so much more than I thought it was. Like, this land means so much more to me and my family and my future than I really expected. I'm so focused on getting out of here, right? The young person thing to do, which is what most young people want to do, is get the hell out of the way from wherever they are.
But she still upholds her responsibilities.
She does. Yeah, she does. She's not like a brat. You know, it's not that kind of character. Mm-hmm. I really appreciated her performance a lot.
Yeah, she is one of the main reasons to see this film. And I mentioned it while we were watching it. I got Julianne Moore vibes a little bit watching her.
Yeah.
Not just because of the hair color. You know, that's an easy thing to say. But even the mannerisms and the way she carried herself, you know, and the going back and forth between very confident and vulnerable within a span of 15 minutes. Julianne Moore is very good at doing that too in the films I've seen her in. So I really liked her a lot. And also, I want to mention, I don't know how to pronounce her name, Annabelle Armour? Am I saying that right?
Yes, Margaret.
This is Buck's wife. The two of them together made a really cute, cute couple. Like,
the grandma you love, right? She's the grandma you love. You just
right.
Know. Well, you also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
And not that you like to see old people make out, but when they're kissing each other, it felt real.
Oh, there's a lot of slobber. Yeah. There's a lot of, there's like, there's moisture all over their faces. Yeah, it's weird, very creepy. It's like they took the teeth out and just went for it. I kid. You got to mention Charlie Behrens, right?
Yes. Packers fans are very familiar with Charlie Behrens, and he was actually a small highlight in this film for me, because I'm so used to seeing him do those goofy stand-up comedy or YouTube videos where he's very silly, and he plays.
Explain those for people that aren't Packer fans. Like, okay, so they know what he does.
Yeah, sorry, I'm talking to the Packers fan audience, but he makes these very silly videos where he has that Midwestern Minnesota, Northern Wisconsin accent, and he acts kind of silly and goofy and puts himself in this and in these situations where he confronts Bears fans, and he's just very, very slapsticky and very goofy. But in this, he plays like the radio announcer for the games.
Yes.
For like a local radio station. And you never see the silliness, which is I was kind of expecting. I mean, he cracks some just radio style jokes, but you actually see a lot of heart in him. There's a moment that I won't spoil where you get some emotion out of him that I was totally not expecting, and it really got to me for a couple, just because I know who he is. And I'm like, damn, we just saw this from Charlie Behrens. Now, it wasn't like a Oscar-worthy performance or anything, but it was just fun to see.
Yeah, it's very good. You know, when people are doing TikTok videos, I know some people like kind of write those guys off. Mm-hmm. As well, I mean, how hard could that be? A lot of that is hard. I've seen mm-hmm. his videos. He puts a lot of work and effort into them. And he's creating a character, right? He's mm-hmm. creating just like any other performance. Here he gets to do that too. And yeah, the scene you're talking about, he actually has a very emotional scene where he looks like someone who is emotive. You know, mm-hmm. he's very involved in what's happening in the scene. Yeah. I really enjoyed him too. And I honestly didn't care if he was there or not. I wasn't somebody who was like, oh, Charlie Behrens here. It wasn't like that for me. I was just a happy coincidence.
Yeah.
Hopefully he hears this. I hope, Charlie, if you hear this, because you maybe you listen to Packer Fan Podcast, because by God, you're devoted.
And we'd love to have you as a guest on the show. Just saying.
You would love to. We better tag him in the socials, man. Maybe you'll see.
Gonna try.
Yeah. Got to. He did a great job, sincerely.
Yeah.
He did a great job. Okay. Well, that kind of brings me to the conclusion of the review. And again, I just want to stress, like, this is not really about football. It is about community and those that support the game. It has a lot of good community football aspects to it, but really it's just about family and neighbors and that selfless devotion to a world uncentered on oneself, you know, like real selflessness, which is a big Midwestern trait as far as I'm concerned. I've lived with mm-hmm. it my whole life. I love it. And, you know, kind of explains why those things are important to us, I would say, and had great performances by me.
Yeah, don't go into this expecting a lot of football footage. You do get some. You know what I mean? There's going to be some old shots of games, wins and losses, and, sure. and special moments and that kind of thing. But it's not a football-forward movie. It is more about the drama. But still, if you're a Packers fan, you're definitely going to want to check it out. Even if you're not, though, I think this is very much worth a watch. It has some unexpected moments. It has lots of levity. It has lots of heart. I guess levity is not the right word. There are some moments that make you smile, but not laugh. Mm-hmm. But there's just a lot of emotion involved in. There's a whole theme kind of going in and out throughout the movie revolving around a Joni Mitchell song that I actually had to look up. That is kind of fun. And the way that whole thing wraps up is just really great. It all ties together in a neat little bow that just makes you smile.
Agreed. This is a really good time at the movie. So we go by, if $10 is the full price of admission, what's your score? Basically out of 10, what's your score for Green and Gold?
I'm going to give it $7. Okay. I think it's a very worthwhile film. I always struggle giving a score a 7 because I feel like that's just like the middle of the road. But, I really enjoyed it. I just don't know how much rewatchability I'll get. This is one of those movies that I will rewatch just to watch somebody else see it.
Sure.
Like my wife hasn't seen this yet, and I can't wait to get a copy of this so that we can watch it together because I think she'll really appreciate it. And I love seeing somebody else enjoy it. But on my own, you know, it's not one I'm going to watch, but it's still really, really good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. I give it 650. That's a good score for me. Like, that's a good score. It's just, mm-hmm. it's a movie that I agree, you might not rewatch it 100 times. It's not one of those, you know, it's not Anchorman, for crying out loud. You know?
But, I love how you say that's the bar.
That's my bar. That's my watchability bar. No, but it's a really good film, and I was really happy with it. I was very surprised. It was as good as it was. You just never know when you get a screener which way it's going to go sometimes. And this was a very good film. I was very happy with how it turned out. And even if you're a Bears fan or a Vikings fan or a Lions fan, I mean, I think you'll still enjoy it because it's really not about the Packers. I mean, just pretend it's your team if you want, but you just know in your heart it's not, and it never will be.
Yeah, and this is based on a true story, is it not?
The Packers are better. Yeah, it is. It is inspired by a true story, which is gotcha. Another great podcast if you've never heard that one.
I have heard it. Listen every week, man.
Yeah, you know, there's a guy at the beginning of that Inspired by a True Story podcast. Sounds a lot like you.
Please be warned.
He's that guy. He's the warning guy. All right. Well, everybody that's listening on The Hollywood Outsider, you go to thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you're not part of the show, that's where you can find The Hollywood Outsider and Inspired by a True Story podcast. Scott, but for my listeners, where do people find you?
I've got two podcasts myself, Packers Fan Podcast. You can listen to that wherever you listen to podcasts. We've also got a website, PackersFanPodcast.com. And I also do a video game podcast called The Gaming Outsider, same place. Same places for the show, and our website is thegamingoutsider.com. Would love it if you guys checked it out. If you'd like to follow me on socials, I am at GoCastScott.
Okay, and if you Packer fans are listening, tag Charlie Behrens, right?
Please do.
Tell him Scott really wants to get this guy on the show. You know, he'd love
I would
to
love that so much. I would love to just talk with that guy.
That's funny. And I'm going to go watch a few of his videos because he does make me laugh. All right, thanks for joining me, Scott.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Guys, that's it for this episode. So remember, thanks, Troy and Amanda, for being here.
As always, yeah.
That's going to do it for this episode. So thanks for listening. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, stream comfortably on your couch, buy popcorn.
Why does it look like Troy just finished up with his Wednesday night activities?
He's wearing a onesie, right?
Like a that's a white wife beater he's wearing. With his chest hair popping out.
It looks like he's going to get in a ventilation shaft.
Yeah, don't do that, Austin Powers.
Yeah. Yippee-ki-yay.
I'm waiting for him to start rubbing his nipples like Austin Powers now.
You're excited? Feel Ew. These nipples.
I had a sweater on. It was too warm up here.
Well, I'm glad you had your video on for us. Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider.
Makes this, Amanda feel better.
God damn you. Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider. Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning entertainment pod fucking...
That comes out weekly.
Take a deep breath.
God, all that chest hair just threw me off.
He's very distracted by the nipple rubbing.
Totally.